As you may know, economics is not a unified subject. There are different schools of thought with different theories. And so one branch was the Austrian school, so-called because it originated in Austria in the late 1800s when it was the Austro-Hungarian Empire. And it was a new school of thought that had a theory of value based on subjective values. Values are subjective. So they rejected the labor theory of value. And they built up an entire theory based on the individual. And they developed then a theory of the business cycle and a theory of capital goods, which mainstream economics didn't absorb, in which they differentiate among capital goods that turn over quickly and those that turn over slowly, which becomes important for the business cycle. So it's a whole body of theory. Some of it was absorbed by the mainstream and some wasn't. It originated in Austria, but it's now worldwide. So it's still called the Austrian School, but there are Americans, Australians, and everybody, people all over the world who are Austrian economists. And two of the major Austrians, well, it was founded by Karl Menger in Austria, and two of the leading economists were Ludwig von Mises and Friedrich Hayek. Hayek, by the way, won a Nobel Prize in economics. Mm-hmm. Hayek emphasized the decentralized aspect of knowledge. Because economic knowledge is decentralized, it's not accessible to a central planner, a central authority. So that was a critique of socialism, that both Mises and Hayek wrote that socialism, as state socialism, couldn't possibly succeed. It was going to be a failure, which it turned out to be. Some Austrians wrote about land, but it really wasn't emphasized too much. So that's the gap in Austrian economics, is they really don't pay much attention to land issues. They do a good job with money, interest, and capital, but not so much with land. But one strength of Austrian economics that I like is that they look at central banking. And because of the very knowledge problem I talked about, that the monetary authority or the central bank simply does not have the knowledge to know the best amount of money supply or the correct interest rate. And so the Austrians say, leave that to the market. Leave the money supply and interest rate to the market with what they call free banking or free market banking. So I think that's very complementary to the Georgist economics, because Georgism does pay attention to land and the taxation of land. And so a synthesis of both schools would really give us a very complete picture, and better than the neoclassical school. But both sides haven't really been talking to each other much, and they misunderstand one another. So I'm in both camps, Georgist and Austrian economics.
You made a fascinating analogy that under state socialism, the governments had great problems in planning how many goods were to be produced and put to market, and put forward that central banks also have the same problem in deciding how much money should go into the marketplace. I was like, wow, I haven't put those two and two together. That was very interesting. So how would the market system then decide the money supply and the way forward?
Yeah. Well, the way it used to be prior to World War One was the world was pretty much on a gold standard. And so gold was the real money. But it was not the only form of purchasing medium. The banks could issue their own banknotes. Under free banking, as practiced in Scotland and other places, a bank can issue its own currency under the name of the bank, but that currency is convertible into gold. And so that provides a flexible and stable money system, because the money can expand as much as the public wants to hold. If the public needs more money, the bank can issue those banknotes, but it's stable because the banks can't issue more than the public wants to hold, otherwise it comes right back to the bank for redemption back into gold. Now today the world does not use gold anymore. It's all fiat money there because of legal tender. Fiat is Latin meaning to make. And if you read the Bible in Latin, in Genesis it says fiat lux, which means let there be light. So God said, let there be light, fiat lux, and governments say, fiat money, let there be money. So today, a transition to free banking would consist of freezing the amount of government money. So the government, the paper money would be frozen, no more would be made, and that would be, in a sense, like gold, the real money. And all future expansion would be by the private banks in private bank notes convertible into the government money, right? And so it would only expand by public demand and not by whatever the central bank wants, as is done today. So there would be no more inflation. Now, if most countries of the world moved to free banking, it would be seen as desirable to have a common currency like we did before World War I, and most likely it would be gold, because gold has properties that make it very suitable as money. And so I think as more countries move to free banking, eventually gold would start to be used as a medium of exchange, and it would eventually replace the government currencies as the basis. So you would basically have gold as the real money and banknotes as money substitutes convertible into gold. And that system worked very well in Scotland. Scotland has been thoroughly studied as an example of free banking. There's a book on it by Lawrence White called Free Banking in Britain. And it worked well until 1844, when the Bank of England took over the system. Not because it wasn't working, but simply they wanted to monopolize the system throughout Great Britain.
One of the interesting theories I've heard is a guy named Silvio Gesell. And he had a concept that every month, if avoiding the gold issue, he mentioned that every month there should be a 1% discount on money, on holding money, and this would stop the hoarding of money. So a huge analogy between what we talk about with land and land hoarding and what Gesell was talking about with money. How do you interpret that?
I don't think that's a wise system, because why should somebody hoard money? If you simply hold money in a vault, it's not earning interest. You're losing interest. You could loan out that money and get interest. And so the only reason to hoard money is if you think the economy is going to be crashing or something like that. And if somebody wants to hoard money, it doesn't really hurt anybody else. Just under free banking, the banks could simply expand banknotes to the amount that people want for transactions. So this hoarding of money is not really a problem in a free market economy.
Because most of that hoarding would go on in banks where they're earning 6 or 7%, and the 1% discount really would not be enough.
Well, if it's in banks, it's not really hoarded, because the banks don't want to sit on money. They're in the business of loading money to get the interest. The hoarding money would be by individual households, hoarding it in their houses or in vaults, in bank deposit boxes or something. So I think it's a solution that... for a non-existent problem. And if it was done by government mandate, you don't want to force people to go out and spend. You know, the free market leaves spending or saving to the individual choice, and then everything's in balance.
Thank you so much for that extended interview.
You're welcome.